The Tom Woods Show, episode 897.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, join Bob Murphy and me for the libertarian event of the year, the Contra Cruise. And this year, we're joined by special guests, including the great Scott Horton, the foreign policy expert you love from The Tom Woods Show. It's filling up faster than ever, so book right now at ContraCruise.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Before I get started today, I want to tell you that next week, Michael Malice is coming to visit me for a couple days. He's in town for an engagement, but I am going to have a couple of days with him. And so we're going to, among other things, record an episode of the show face-to-face for the first time. And I want to solicit questions for him, so I am soliciting them in the Supporting Listener secret Facebook group. And if you'd like to belong to that, the pathway to get there is supportinglisteners.com. I'm going to be doing this about a week from today, I would say. And as I record this, it is April, what is it today? 26th, 2017, probably 8 days from today, I'll be doing that. So, fun episode that will be. Ask anything you want. We'll get that thing answered for you. Plus, I have a really special surprise next week. Maybe the week after. I don't know when it's going to happen. You'll know. Believe me. You'll know. No, I'm not getting Donald Trump on the show. It has nothing to do with that. Just wait and see. You'll know. You'll say, this is the surprise. All right, let's see what we're going to talk about today. Today, I want to talk about something that I actually wrote one of my emails about. And people have been badgering you about getting on my email list recently here on the show. So if you're not on it yet, you can go to tomsfreebooks.com, get yourself a free ebook, and you will be added to my libertarian list. I have two email lists. The main one is the libertarian one. And if you get one of my libertarian ebooks, you get added to the libertarian list. So I did an email the other day that some people are saying is the best email I've ever written. That's very nice. Who knows if it is or not. But it's on a topic that's going to annoy some people. So if this is too much for you, if you feel like this just doesn't work for you, this topic, then I have 896 other episodes. You can go listen to one of those that might make you happier. But I think there's some value in talking about this kind of thing. And it involves, I'm going to have to criticize another libertarian. And I know people just don't like that. They say, Woods, we shouldn't be criticizing other libertarians. That's what's wrong with libertarians. All we do is criticize each other, and we don't spend enough time attacking the government. Well, I don't know where you're living, because everywhere I turn, libertarians are criticizing the government. When we criticize each other, it's just a fun spare time hobby. Now, I want to defend libertarian infighting for a minute, if I may. If somebody is mixing up the message and sending the wrong message to people, why would you not want to correct that? Why would you say, well, to each his own, everybody has his own definition of libertarianism? No, that's not true. What are you talking about? Well, we can't have that. That's not to say we can't have some open questions among ourselves that haven't been completely resolved. Well, that's one thing. But I'm talking about questions that are more or less resolved, where there's a libertarian who's giving a confusing answer or the flat-out wrong answer. What would be wrong with correcting that person? It doesn't mean that's all you do, right? It just means that once in a while you feel you have to do it. Now, in my case, it's true I do go after other libertarians once in a while, but really not that much. I mean, honestly, you look through my corpus of articles. I mean, how many of them are really criticizing other libertarians? They're usually criticizing critics of libertarianism, which I do as a teaching opportunity. There'll be some article on Salon and everybody's sharing it on Facebook. Well, if you can respond to that, that can defuse some of the sting of the article. And also, it's an opportunity to help libertarians defend themselves better and even to reach people of goodwill who have no dog in that particular hunt, but yet who are fair-minded and say, well, I guess that attack on libertarianism misfired after all. So I do that. That's really what I do most of the time when I write. But once in a while, you gotta correct other people, particularly when they attack good people. If you don't defend your friends, then you're a pathetic bum, loser. I don't know what other word. It must be a whole bunch of words. Ingrate, I don't know if ingrate, unless it's a benefactor of yours, and in this case it really is. But anyway, they're all kinds, think of all kinds of reprobate, you know, whatever. Terrible person. You're a terrible person if you don't defend your friends when they're attacked. You should defend your friends when they're attacked. That's one of the good, but I think that's one of the qualities I look for in a friend, is when the chips are down, is that friend going to back me? And that doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not going to be like 1939 Poland and just deliberately get myself in a situation where people have to come to my assistance. I mean, I'm just living my life innocently. And by the way, that was a pretty provocative statement on my part, wasn't it? Here I am just living my life innocently, and boom, somebody comes along and attacks me. You know, I at least want to know that people agree with me. So Ron Paul got attacked last week, as you know, by a vice president over at the Cato Institute, Brink Lindsey. And again, I got to defuse this. And you may say, Woods, why are you taking so much time to defuse criticism? Because, look, when you've done nearly 900 episodes, when you've been writing about this stuff for 15 plus years, you know what the criticisms are going to be before they are even uttered. Okay? Trust me on this. This is necessary. People will say, Woods, the Cato Institute does a lot of great work. What's the matter with you? What's wrong with you? Why can't you just be friendly? Well, as you know, most of the time I say nothing whatsoever about the Cato Institute, so leave me alone, right? I don't say anything about them. Secondly, the same people who are going to criticize me for being critical of the Cato Institute were not critical of Brink Lindsey for attacking Ron Paul. Well, that's a double standard. Why are you more upset at me for responding than you are at the guy who started it? So I still kind of believe that the guy who started it is kind of significant in figuring out who's to blame in a particular situation. So Brink Lindsey is vice president of research at the Cato Institute, and he launched this attack on Ron Paul. And I want to talk about that because it was such a bizarre attack, totally unnecessary and uncalled for, but it does reveal something about that particular orbit. These Beltway folks, a whole lot of them, not all of them, obviously, but a whole lot of them agree with him. They hated Ron with a fiery passion. They hated him. And there were a lot of reasons they hated him. Sometimes it was flat out envy. You know, here we've had these, you know, seven figure budgets, you know, eight figure budgets for years and years. We haven't been able to generate one millionth of the youth movement that Ron Paul generated by standing up and saying really unfashionable things that not in a million years would we ever say. So I think there's that. There are a number of reasons. And it was so funny to see in the presidential campaigns to see these people, you know, glumly sitting on the sidelines or, you know, occasionally feeling compelled to say something nice about him. And, you know, but then they would attack him here and there and everybody just ignored them. It was so glorious. Nobody cared. Now, there's a longstanding rivalry dispute that goes back a long time between the Cato Institute and a lot of other libertarians, and in particular between the Cato Institute and the Mises Institute. Now, I'm not going to get into all that. I'm not even really qualified to get into all that, all the historical details of that. But I will say that I saw this firsthand myself. Now, again, basically my view is there are some decent people at the Cato Institute doing some decent work, and I've read a lot of their stuff and benefited from it. I've cited some of their stuff in my writing. I've recommended some of their stuff here on the show, which is more than you can say about what they've done for me, right? I mean, they act as if I don't even exist. So I feel like I've been reasonable. I've been the adult in the room in this situation. But all the same, in 2006, I won a book prize for my book, The Church and the Market. And it was a prize that was co-sponsored by the Templeton Foundation and the Intercollegiate Studies Institute. And there were three places, first, second, and third for books, and first, second, and third for articles. So I won first place in the book category. And I remember Ed Stringham, and I think a co-author, might have been Ben Powell, actually. I can't remember who his co-author was, or maybe he wrote it himself, and I'm not giving him proper credit. Anyway, one of the winners in the article category was Ed Stringham, who, as you know, if you listened a long time, has been on this show. Well, apparently, in advance, the Cato Institute had agreed to host whoever the winners were at a one-day conference at the Cato Institute. Well, they obviously had no idea I was going to win. Senior fellow of the Mises Institute, they had no idea I was going to win. Their people had been smearing me for years. Tom Palmer, for example. This is a guy, let me pause for a minute. Tom Palmer's a guy I got to know when I was a student at Harvard. And at that time, he was with the Institute for Humane Studies, which liked me for a long time. And maybe they still do slightly like me. I don't even know anymore. I don't keep up with it. You know, I don't have to. I got my own platform. I don't care what these people are saying about me. Doesn't matter. Does not matter. But anyway, I got to know him when I was an undergraduate, and I talked to him on the phone quite a few times about what I might write my senior thesis on. He actually helped me find some texts that were helpful to me, and we talked about topics, and he was very friendly, and I liked him. I didn't see anything wrong with him. He came and gave a talk on socialism at Harvard that I went to, and it was fine. Then I came out with the Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. Now, bear in mind, nothing has happened between Tom Palmer and me in the interim. Not a thing. I've not spoken to him. I mean, we just fell out of touch. Fair enough. All of a sudden, out of the blue, with no acknowledgement that he ever knew me or had been any kind of mentor to me or anything, he goes on a crazed attack on me on his website to the point where, in an article about me and my book, he's got a picture of a Ku Klux Klansman, which, as you know, is about as toxic as it gets. Typical leftist move, naturally. So that's what he did. And as far as I know, nobody at the Cato Institute disciplined him for that or said, whoa, that's totally below the... What are you talking about? You think the guy belongs to the Ku Klux Klan, which has, what, 27 members in the U.S. at this point? Well, I mean, what a horrible thing to do. So I more or less ignored him, because that's the thing to do with this guy. I ignored him. He's bitter and resentful. Basically, he's one of the most hateful, bitter, and resentful people I know. And if you say, Woods, you are lowering yourself to his level by mentioning this. Nope. Then I want to see the letter you wrote to Tom Palmer telling him that he shouldn't have done that to me. Because that's a double standard again. I am allowed to defend myself. Anyway, then 2010 came along. I had my book Nullification. That's very unfashionable for Washington think tanks. There's no Washington think tank that wants to support the idea of the states resisting the federal government. Okay, they're not going to do that. Even though Jefferson favored that, was very, very clear about this, and I show that in my book, Nullification. I will link to that book, by the way, on the show notes page. You would enjoy that book. And you can get the audiobook version for free at tomwoodsaudio.com through the Audible offer there. All right, so I spoke at CPAC that year in 2010. Got a tremendous response. I mean, if anybody who was there in those years, the years where Campaign for Liberty really dominated CPAC, 2009, 10, and 11, you will remember. Yeah, I mean, I was mobbed with people. People wanted to take my picture with me. They wanted autographs. It was over the top unbelievable. Palmer writes an article saying, Woods wins the prize for craziest guy at CPAC. Now, what made me the craziest guy at CPAC? Well, because I supported nullification, because, of course, we all know all respectable libertarians believe that the federal government is absolutely supreme in everything, and that that's the correct libertarian view. And I presume that to believe otherwise is to support slavery, which I have already explained is absolutely not true, is the exact opposite of the truth, as you see in my book. So he does this. Well, then I guess he stopped attacking me because he realized that it has no effect that I have managed to build up a really substantial following at this point through books and YouTube and whatever, so that throughout all their attempts to smear me, I just kept on going. I just kept making the videos. I just kept writing best-selling books. I just kept writing articles. I just kept flying around the country and speaking. So it just didn't matter. After a while, I just became bulletproof. That doesn't mean to say I could do absolutely anything and people would defend me, but it's kind of like the situation where Pat Buchanan gets attacked in the media and all his supporters know, well, typical left-wing media, of course they're going to attack Pat Buchanan. They don't even think another thing of it. So somebody like Palmer attacks me. Nobody bats an eye. Nobody says, oh, you know, I never thought of that. Maybe this Woods guy is terrible. Nobody ever says that. So I just continued to have – I'm just going to be blunt about it, folks. I'm just going to be blunt about it. I continued to go from success to success. So he just threw up his hands and gave up, and that was it. Never heard from Tom Palmer again. But that's the sort of thing these people have done to me. And at worst, what have I said about the Cato Institute that's bad? I mean, as I say, I've cited them. I've linked to them. I've had people from Cato on my show and introduced them as being with the Cato Institute. I mean, I think I've been reasonably mature. Given, I mean, if anything, I would say I have been astonishingly restrained under the circumstances, because I bet most people listening to this didn't even know about how Tom Palmer has treated me, because I never even mentioned it. Okay, so I think I've been fairly good about this. All right, so going back to the story, 2006, I win this book prize. Cato has this conference. So now they can't back out because Woods won. So they have to feature me. You know, they're hating every minute of it, of course. But I showed up absolutely the opposite of, I'm sure, what they expected in their comic book version of me. They probably thought I'd show up with a big chip on my shoulder and I was going to get up there and denounce them. To the contrary, I couldn't have been more cordial. And I gave a completely uncontroversial speech that would not have made any of them unhappy. And in fact, later on, Tom Palmer actually needed to refer to one of the points I made, but he could not bring himself to mention my name. So he said, as somebody said earlier, as somebody. Well, okay, at least I'm a somebody. But what was funny about this was, in the big poster and all the big promotional materials that they did for that event, every single person who was speaking, everybody other than me, the book people and the article people, they had their institutional affiliation listed under their name, except me, because they could not put Mises Institute on any Cato material. I mean, how childish is that, right? Could you imagine the Mises Institute inviting somebody from Cato and not mentioning they're from the Cato Institute? I mean, could you imagine? I mean, what a bunch of babies. We would never do that. In fact, Jeff Dice has interviewed Dan Mitchell. Of course, he introduced him as being from Cato. What is the deal with this childishness? So with me, I was just listed as author, the church, and the market. So I have no institutional affiliation. I'm just this disembodied spirit floating around. Absolutely crazy. Now, the award was for 2006. The event may have been in 2007 if you're, for some reason, we're trying to track it down. But that's obviously not the point. I just couldn't get over that. And Ed couldn't get over that either. So in his remarks, he just got right up there and several times deliberately referred to the Mises Institute because he just could not get over they were acting this way. So, all right, that's a little bit of background on my interactions with these people. Not fun people, a lot of them. I could give you some David Bowes stories, but I'm not going to do that, right? Because that would just be gossip for no good reason. Not going to do that. But that's why it's not just libertarian purity or this and that that explains why somebody might be unhappy with them. It's personal experiences like this that, you know, sort of leave a sour taste in your mouth. I'll put it that way. All right. Anyway, Brink Lindsey attacks Ron Paul on Twitter. I mean, this already sounds like something out of high school, doesn't it? But of course, they didn't have Twitter when I was in high school. And he says, Ron Paul's xenophobia, Ron Paul, xenophobic, right, was a hideous corruption of libertarian ideas. Now, this is being uttered, by the way, by a guy who supported quite a few recent wars, including the most idiotic war in American history, the Iraq War. And by the way, I do allow, I'm a very open-minded person, I allow for debate on what was the most idiotic war in American history. My vote is the Iraq War, but I'm willing to entertain other possibilities there. He supported that, but Ron Paul's the xenophobe. So Lindsey wants to bomb people on propaganda grounds that wouldn't have satisfied a second grader. So he's okay with all these foreigners dying, but the xenophobe is the guy who doesn't want the foreigners to die. If you can keep up with the Cato Institute lexicon on stuff like this, then you know you're better than I am. So totally detached from reality. Now, Lindsey himself is somebody who has favored, he absolutely hates the fact that libertarians and conservatives have ever worked together. That's terrible. Now, you all know I have not a whole lot of patience for the neocons, and I've been very critical of them and of a lot of conservatives here on the show, to the point where a lot of people said, why don't you ever criticize Barack Obama? All you ever do is criticize the right. So, you know, I don't need to be lectured to about the problems with the right. But I do know that I make a heck of a lot more converts on the right than I do on the left, and that's something I pointed out on the show quite a few times. Well, Lindsey favors something, a view that he calls libertarian, because the left shares some of our views, so maybe they'll want to hook up with us. Well, you can check your local listings to see if there is a Brink Lindsey show on MSNBC, but I'm afraid you will be disappointed. So that's how that has worked. All right. So I personally think it's a bit rich for Lindsey, of all people, to call anybody a xenophobe after all the foreigners whose lives he favored snuffing out. No, I didn't. This is all collateral damage. Yeah, you had to know that was going to happen. You had to know that chaos was going to result. You had to know that millions of people are going to be displaced from their homes. And if you didn't know that, then you're a moron who's not entitled to an opinion in the first place. All right. And moreover, he just cannot get over anti-war people. he's critical of anti-war people. Don't they understand that Pentagon press releases are to be trusted? Why, these people are simply trying to keep us safe. I mean, this is, that's xenophobic. You know, where I accept what my government is telling me, and people who really don't accept the foreign policy analysis of their government are probably weirdos. Probably weirdos the libertarian movement doesn't really need. We need respectable people who get their foreign policy news from the Washington Post, seems to be the attitude coming from him. Now, that's not true of everybody at Cato, so I'm not trying to paint with that broad a brush. I'm painting with just this one brush, with this one person. And I wrote in my email, even if Ron Paul were a xenophobe, if I lived in a country that was in the crosshairs of the U.S., I think I'd rather be facing someone who just called me nasty names as opposed to somebody who actually wanted to drop bombs on me. Well, then he's upset. He tweets out he's upset that Ron did not support various trade agreements and that only a conspiracy theorist could hold Ron's view. And so in my email, I reminded, or perhaps for the first time informed, Brink Lindsey that in the late 1940s, when the International Trade Organization was floated, which was a precursor to what we have now, it was actually the free traders like a businessman Philip Courtney, who was a friend of Mises, who led the opposition to it. Courtney wrote a book called The Economic Munich, which explained why the whole bureaucratic approach of these trade agreements had to be rejected. And the great, let's say, Austrian fellow traveler economist Wilhelm Röpke also opposed the International Trade Organization for the same reason. So now we're not allowed to like Wilhelm Röpke because he apparently on conspiracy grounds opposed a trade agreement. Then he says, this is Lindsey, the libertarian movement had an ugly, illiberal streak long before Ron Paul. It's been there from the get-go. Now notice, bombing the hell out of Iraq for no reason, I mean for stupid propaganda reasons, that's not ugly and illiberal, by the way. That's why that's a matter of public policy. That's not ugly or illiberal at all. War is not ugly and illiberal. Obviously, unnecessary war is not ugly or illiberal. Or just repeating propaganda lines that nobody in his right mind believes and everybody in the whole world is laughing at, that's not ugly and illiberal. Now, what's Lindsey linking to when he says the libertarian movement had an ugly, illiberal streak? Well, of course, he's linking to Murray Rothbard. Now, not to the entire corpus of Rothbard's work, which is astonishing, and I've had an episode on the anti-Rothbard cult, which Lindsey belongs to, the anti-Rothbard cult. Rothbard is, almost certainly the most prolific libertarian ever. And he lived before the internet, and yet he wrote these amazing works. Ludwig von Mises thought Rothbard's work, Man, Economy, and State, was an astonishing contribution. Not good enough for Lindsey, though, guy you never heard of. Mises' praise is apparently not good enough. His book on the Great Depression was absolutely amazing. His American History was amazing. His work on the Panic of 1819, his theorizing, his popular work, it's an incredible, dozens of books that keep coming out long after his death. Newsletters, articles, scholarly journals, an amazing output of work. But can't like him, can't like Murray Rothbard, no sir. So we're going to summarize Murray's entire contribution to scholarship by linking to a letter he wrote about the Dixiecrats in 1948. Because that doesn't sound like something Rachel Maddow would do. Have you noticed there's a pattern here, by the way? That the way Tom Palmer treated me and the way Lindsey is treating Ron Paul and Rothbard sounds exactly like the way Rachel Maddow treats her enemies. I leave you to draw your own conclusion about that. So anyway, Rothbard believed in states' rights, and that Lindsey doesn't even bother to refute that because that's just so obvious. That's evil. It's obvious how evil a states' rights position is because that must just mean oppression. That's what that must mean. And yet, the day I wrote this email was the day where we commemorate the Armenian Genocide. Now, the Armenians lived in a centralized regime without states' rights, and I rather think they were not particularly enriched by living under that particular arrangement. So if you look back, you actually find that it's pretty consistent among libertarians at that time that they all favored states' rights. They all favor keeping government as local as possible. So Frank Chodorov, apparently we're not allowed to like Frank Chodorov. Felix Morley, who was published by Liberty Fund. So we're not allowed to like Liberty Fund or Felix Morley. It's getting, now we're really narrowing down the number of people you're allowed to like. here. F.A. Hayek said that liberty was more likely to flourish in small states. I've talked about this and the reasoning for this in plenty of other episodes. And incidentally, here's something interesting. A lot of times we hear it said jokingly by libertarians that, you know, you become a real libertarian when you've been denounced as a liberal and a conservative in the same day, because we confuse people because we don't belong to any of their categories. And so they don't know how to classify us. And I think libertarianism has the same effect on Brink Lindsey, because on the one hand, he tells us all about the wicked Rothbard who favored states' rights, and we all know what that means, right? We've all read our cartoonish U.S. history textbook, so we all know that states' rights means that, even though it doesn't, as you'll find if you read my book Nullification or listen to my other episodes on this subject. But at the same time, Rothbard is, again, just being a libertarian when, and this is, of course, stuff that you'll be surprised to learn, no doubt Lindsey leaves out, perhaps because he doesn't know. But Rothbard, when he supported Norman Mailer's run for mayor of New York City in 1969, Rothbard said that one of the things he liked about Mailer was that he wanted to free Huey Newton from jail, the co-founder of the Black Panthers. That was Rothbard's view. Then Rothbard wrote in his newsletter, The Libertarian Forum, when he's talking about Bobby Seale, who was the other founder of the Black Panthers, this is Rothbard. This is the terrible, illiberal, ugly Rothbard wrote this. What kind of a free country is this when a man is forced to accept an unwanted lawyer? Then when Bobby Seale proceeded to defend his case anyway, Judge Hoffman had Seale gagged and shackled in court to form a sight strongly reminiscent of Nazi or Soviet justice. Finally, when Seale tried to escape his bondage and protest his treatment, Judge Hoffman quickly sentenced the prisoner to an unprecedented 4 years in jail for contempt of court. Rothbard also objected to the arrest for incitement to riot of H. Rapp Brown. He wrote that, "Who can now deny that Negroes in America are a colonized and occupied people?" That was back in the 1960s that he wrote that. So there's also that part of Rothbard, but curiously enough, it doesn't make it through in Lindsey's version. How about that? My thanks to Bob Wenzel for digging out those quotations over at targetliberty.com. I don't think Lindsey knew any of that, because the sum total of Lindsey's knowledge here appears to be something like Rothbard, bad and mean. Ron Paul, also mean. We, nice. Bombs, yes, but mostly nice. So on the one hand, we've got Brink Lindsey and his libertarianism. You can see the success that that's had. And on the other hand, Ron Paul, who pops out of nowhere, generates a massive youth movement, gets kids reading Mises and opposing war and central banking, and that makes Lindsey go berserk. Well, no wonder. War and central banking are about the last two issues Lindsey wants discussed. The very heart of the empire, forget it. Let's make libertarianism about prostitution and abortion, discussion of which poses not the slightest threat to the regime. Nice, tame little libertarianism. Sure, we have our quirks, but we're not unrespectable. That's what it boils down to. There, I got that off my chest, and you can now decide. You can either hang out with Brink Lindsey and his 12-person group of anti-Ron Paul libertarians. These people sound like a real blast. Or you can come hang out with me and with the brilliant, non-tame, totally hardcore libertarian folks in my private group, entry to which is at supportinglisteners.com. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.